So we're in Austin. We're at Gabrielle's event, Forever Strong. And I'm in the lobby with Bruce, I think it was, getting ready to walk to the gym where we're going to go to. Because you pull up it on the map and it's 0.2 miles away. I'm just going to walk there. Yeah. Why would I drive? You're like, you want to ride? I'm like, I think I'm good. I think I'm going to walk. And you were like, it's like 15 minutes on a highway. Are you sure? I said, are you it is. So, which by the way, is typical for me because I could get lost in my backyard if you spin me around with a bag on my head. So I accepted your ride offer, which is very kind of you. I felt so awkward on the way back because at the end, you and the other woman whose name I forgot.
Shanta.
Mm-hmm. Waited for me. You offered me a ride back and I had seen someone there who was a friend of mine who I had never met in person before. And he was like, hey, do you want to ride back with us? Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I don't want to say no to this guy, Joe, if you're listening, Joe Zindel. I wanted to ride back with him because I wanted to get to know him too. And I was like, man, do I sound like a better deal guy from you guys? I didn't think you would be upset by it, but I was the whole ride back, that was what was in my mind. I'm like, God, I hope that they don't think I'm a douche for saying no for the ride back.
No, because it would have been a douchey of me to just leave, right? Versus not asking
potentially.
You. So, yeah, we're both thinking of each other.
All right, well,
yeah.
I appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. So what brought you out to that event? What made you want to go to Austin?
That is a great question. So
I hope to hear you say that a lot, by the way.
Yes.
It's my job.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I really just, you know, I've been in the human performance space for about a decade now. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the data side of things. So I just want to learn as much as I can from like the coaching and the nutrition and, you know, this whole revolution about protein forward and learning about a lot of women's health mm-hmm. type things. Because in the last, you know, 5 years or so, Dr. Stacey Sims has really brought to light women's, you know, performance and strength training. So mm-hmm. wanted to learn more.
So I imagine one of your favorite talks then would have been from the woman who's the, what is she, the chief data officer or whatever she was at Whoop?
Yeah, Kristen Holmes.
Yeah. That was one of your favorite talks?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was like, oh, she speaks well mm-hmm. and she's smart. Get me out of here for mm-hmm. that talk. Because mm-hmm. the data, like, what I find fascinating about people like you and you in particular is data for me is, it's cool to have. But I'm like, I feel like we can see it. Mm-hmm. But then when you really get into the granular details, no, the data is necessary. Then what's unique about you is most of the people who I know who are into the data are like, I'm trying to think of a nice way to describe it, but I'm going to struggle. Very difficult to socialize with.
Right.
It's like you're, okay, mm-hmm. I don't know how to speak your language, so I'm just going to let you do your thing and you let me know if you want, mm-hmm. if you want to know right. something. Do you find that too?
For sure. And people have called me a unicorn mm-hmm. because not a lot of, and there are, I mean, I know a lot of data folks that are very sociable, but it's very uncommon, mm-hmm. you know? So, but it's great because like I was telling you earlier, I love data because it's very logical, obviously analytical, but it's also creative and artful because you can arrive at the same answer multiple different ways. And when you talk to other data nerds about how they got to that answer, you just see all these different perspectives. But then taking that answer and then applying it to a business side of things or like talking to non-data folks, mm-hmm. That's the magic. That's where the magic happens because yes, that's where a lot of data falls short.
You're a translator mm-hmm, in that
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
Where do you draw the line? And I'll explain the line I'm talking about. There's permission and there's validation. Permission is there are people who are all the way on the permission side. We can't do anything with people unless we have data to support it's efficacious. And then there's the validation side, which is I believe what I just did is efficacious. Can somebody please study it? And those two worlds of people have a very difficult time communicating mm-hmm. with one another, at least mm-hmm. from my experience. I am as far on the validation side as possible. Like I'm the guy who I'll ask forgiveness, not permission. Mm-hmm. Where are you at on that? And how do you kind of marry those two? Because you need both.
You definitely need both. And once upon a time, I worked at a company called Exos on the research mm-hmm. team. And it was such a great experience because that was definitely the permission side. But when you're running a business, you need to be on the validation side. So I love data at the speed of business, depending on what you're doing, right? Like if you're trying to research cures for cancer, of course, permission. But if you're trying to understand how to have a better squat or a faster squat or anything that you don't need research necessarily, if that makes sense, you know, I just really love test, learn, and apply.
You just gave a tagline to a company in the future, by the way. If you ever want to start a data analytics company for data at the speed of business, that's a good tagline.
Yeah, that's been my motto for a long time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you hear it somewhere?
It's just from experience.
What do you do when you're on the data side of things? Let's say for an Exos. And I'm not going to, we're not nitpicking Exos. You just set them, so I'm going to go there.
Sure.
You see data that indicates that something that they're doing lacks some of the efficacy that they would like to believe that it has because it fits the narrative, it fits the business model, whatever the case might be. What do you do when you see something like that happening?
That's a great question.
Thanks.
And I almost feel like that's an interview question, so you should hang on to that. But
what do you mean?
It's kind of, to me, it's like, how do you influence change, right? And so it depends on the team and the person and the stakeholders, but really you have to approach it not as a get, so that someone doesn't start on the defense, right? You just have to say, like, you're doing great. Did you notice that here's this marker that could be improved, right? Instead of you're doing it wrong and it's not working X, Y, and Z. I mean, it's just common social skills, I think, but not, like you mentioned, not a lot of data people have that, so.
Yeah, I want to be clear to everyone who's listening. We have people at Active Life who are on the data side.
Yes.
So we're not just flying from my hip, right? And one of the things that, like, I see a lot of stuff in the health and performance and fitness space that I feel like anybody who wants to twist the data can, and then it tells their story. And then if you wanted to say, well, but what about these obvious things? That would be just as true and just as accurate. How do you, as a data person, a data analyst, like what's the right way to describe it?
Data nerd. I mean,
data nerd. Perfect. Yeah. We'll go with that. That's the official title.
Exactly.
Chief data nerd.
Yes.
How do you figure out whether we're telling a story because it's the one that we want to tell, or if we're telling a story because it's the one that the data actually shares?
That's actually something they don't teach in school, and you just pick that up through experience and knowing that data can tell any story you want it to tell, truly. And it's asking the right questions to understand, okay, how, asking the right questions without sounding like you're shooting holes in people's work, right? Because there's a fine line. But asking questions to understand how they arrived at that, and I'm going to call it an answer, results, insights, whatever it may be. Just questions.
So do you find that you need the patience to plant seeds and walk away?
Say more.
I'll use a test that I'll describe, right? First of all, you went through our movement screen today. I tell people all the time it's sensitive, not specific. We don't know exactly what we're seeing as a result of this, but it indicates certain things that might lead to other things. We have to do further testing to corroborate our theories. It's not conclusive of anything. It's a breadcrumb. When I look at a test like, for example, a FMS, which is what a lot of these bigger facilities are using, or the SFMA. For people who don't know, these were the groundbreaking, industry-leading movement screens that I absolutely owe a debt of gratitude to people like Gray Cook and John Torian for building them, because that's where I get the idea to say, okay, I have permission to do this. I'm going to figure out a way that I believe is more efficacious, now that we've put that on the table. One of the tests in an FMS is a straight leg raise. And that's supposed to be a test for hamstring length, but it's not. It's an active test, so it's just as much evaluating my ability to produce force across my hip flexors, stabilize my knee, decelerate at my hamstring, control an end range position. It doesn't test the length of the hamstring at all, but it's one of these tests that's like a standard. If I was on the data side, I would have a really hard time saying, I need somebody to explain to me how this, how what I'm thinking here is incorrect. And I wouldn't be able to say, do you think maybe the hip flexors have a role in this? Do you think maybe the ability to keep the knee extended has a role in this? Because if they gave me an answer that was, yeah, maybe, I would need it to end with, so maybe it doesn't fucking work.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the patience I'm talking about. You plant the seed to let them decide maybe it's not the best test for what we're saying it is, which doesn't make it a bad test. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I have the patience to wait like that.
I mean, there's a point where you have to draw a line, right? You know, and say, well, here's what the data is saying. And then so data is always a supporting role, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, you're passing this information off to what is supposed to be the expert. And if you give them all the data, that's all you can do. You can't, it's like, hey doctor, I'm showing you all this data, but do you override your doctor? Perhaps.
Sometimes.
But yeah, right. So it's really just a fine line of figuring that out. But the patient's part, you just kind of grow thick skin, because in the world of data, when you present something, you're either right or you're wrong. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you're wrong, but it's not a credibility thing. It's like, I didn't think of it that way. You know, and it's internally. It's not like something you're mm-hmm. sharing externally, of course. But
the way we I'm curious your thoughts on this then, because I see that a little bit differently. The way that we describe what you're talking about is the difference between truth and accuracy. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we're driving on the highway and we see a car accident.
Sure.
Maybe you think, wow, life is short. I need to take more chances. I think, wow, driving is dangerous. I need to be more cautious. Mm-hmm. Both of those things are true. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that's accurate is that there was a car accident and mm-hmm. we both saw it. Mm-hmm. So when you're describing data like that, I did a podcast last week with a friend of mine, Dr. Amy West, who's a physiatrist for a big hospital system in the Northeast.
I know Amy West.
Do you?
Yep.
How mm-hmm. do you know Amy?
Through Exos.
Okay.
We had a meeting not too long ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So great human. Mm-hmm. I love that she was down to come in here and have a friendly debate with me about mm-hmm. a topic and then get on some common ground. We were talking about the incidences of injury rates in CrossFit gyms. And I don't think CrossFit gyms are dangerous, but I want CrossFit as an entity to acknowledge that people get hurt in them so that more people can be comfortable going in because they don't feel like they're being lied to. Mm-hmm. And the data that she had was that the injury rate of CrossFit is one in every, four out of every 1,000 hours injuries or something, where running is three times as likely. Right? 12 out of every 1,000 hours. So then I asked, well, that's the data. That is real data. Mm-hmm. I said, how was injury defined? Injury was defined as an acute onset of discomfort while doing the activity, and then at least 3 days without being able to do the activity at all. And so I said, so it's true, CrossFit had a lower incidence, but if you hurt your elbow in a CrossFit gym, you come in tomorrow and you just don't use your elbow. If I hurt my knee running, I can't go running without my knee. How are we actually measuring the incidence? And that's data telling two different stories.
Right. Well, it's like my question is, and I'm not debating the data, right. But probably aren't reporting that in CrossFit as much as you are in running. Maybe. I don't know. There's so many angles you could come at it.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Look, you want to see how a study's going to end these days, you just look at who's funding it.
Oh. Anytime.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember when you first realized that you were into data?
Yes. And I just stumbled upon it, actually. So I grew up in a small town in Louisiana, didn't know what engineering was at all. I started college in kinesiology because I thought I wanted to be a coach, and quickly realized that I loved sports because I also grew up playing sports. Mm-hmm. But I just was so math minded, and I've discovered engineering, and I was like, that's what I want to do, and figure out how to make my way back to human performance. But I didn't know that's what it was called back mm-hmm. then. And, you know, in college, it was very strictly, you know, my degree's in computer engineering. So it's building computers from the ground up and then programming from the ground up. And none of that really fit. You know, I didn't want to build machines necessarily. But I started my first job at Intel as a systems engineer, and looking at, is kind of boring, very boring actually, computer chip data, like inventory data, mm-hmm. and optimizing where that inventory was stored. And so that part of it was really dry, looking at the data, analyzing it, but then coming back up to the stakeholders to say, hey, did you know if you did this, you'd have like an extra $10 million? And they're like, sick.
What's an example of that?
We were looking at, so global reverse logistics is when you return something. So where does that, for example, Intel, where does that computer chip go when you return it? And there's global hubs everywhere. And I hope, hopefully this is common knowledge. I'm not sharing anything that's not known, but.
Meaning that Intel has shared it.
Yeah. I'm assuming they have, but I haven't worked there in many years. So, but yeah, just taking all of this. So because Intel, they make billions every quarter. So when you make that kind of money, you don't really have to put a lot of thought into like efficiency at first, because you just have so much resource to put, like, we're just going to put a warehouse here and here and here and getting excited about Intel. Yeah, yeah.
Getting excited about resources.
Oh my God, data. I mean, I do get really excited about it, but so coming in and saying like, okay, well, you have all these warehouses. Here's how you can optimize where these computer chips go and how long you should store them. Because say a computer chip is stopped manufactured in like 2020. Well, how long do you have to keep that inventory if you get returns on it? Mm-hmm. I don't remember specific numbers because it was probably 2016 once I left, but just taking that and just really opening the eyes of these stakeholders that have been in the job for 20 years and not really thinking about how that they could just optimize these hubs across the world. So we built a few data backends to help them with that. And it was a fun. I had to fly to Malaysia. Okay. So, yeah.
Why Malaysia? Is that where the...
That was one of their supply chain hubs.
That's so interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Like the whole idea that... I know this is off topic, but the whole idea that right now, the reason the United States cares about Taiwan is because there are microchips there that we would take a decade to be able to produce here the same way.
Yep.
I'm like, why? Why is all that stuff in Asia? You don't know.
I don't know.
Okay. And when I hear Malaysia, I don't know if, where does your mind go when you hear about Malaysia? You're probably to work for Intel.
Yeah.
Mine goes to Zoolander. You ever seen that movie?
Yeah.
Oh
my God. Yeah.
My brain goes straight there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were in school growing up, you weren't thinking about this kind of stuff. You were thinking about sports, performance, training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a year-round athlete since 5 years old. I played volleyball, basketball, track, softball. And this is crazy to say in high school.
You a hurdler?
Was I a hurdler? No, but I was a sprinter, javelin, high jump.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And this was 20, 25 years ago. And, you know, the training methodology was go hard every single day, no rest. We didn't think about necessarily nutrition. Like before basketball games, we would eat like Burger King, eating Whoppers before games, like feeling like a Whopper running down the court.
Yeah, of course.
Know? Like terrible. didn't think anything about mental skills, nothing. I mean, before practice, which would last like 4 or 5 hours, maybe 5 minutes of warm-ups and just straight into lifting or running or whatever.
You talking about high school?
High school. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I mean, small town Louisiana. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
That was no different in, I guess, medium town New York.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the only reason I made the basketball team is because I was in better shape than everybody else. And the only reason I was in better shape is because I ran cross country.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the season started and it was like, all right, guys, stretch your hamstrings on the line. We're going to run suicides, which you're not allowed to call suicides anymore. I was the guy who could do it because I was still in shape from the previous season.
Yeah.
But there was no warm up.
No, no. And I always joke with a friend of mine, anytime we were late, every minute you were late, you had to run a sprint. So, okay, running sprints, not warmed up, like that was a hamstring injury waiting to happen. But, you know, you're young, resilient.
So funny enough, or not funny, depending on who's telling the story, I went to Exos in August of 17 just to do some consulting with the physical therapy department. And they were doing the Intern Olympics. Did I tell you this already?
No.
Okay. So I don't know if they did.
Those just ended, by the way. The
okay, so Olympics. They still do them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there were like 6 or 8 interns, and one of the interns there was an Olympic lifter, this woman, Olympic lifter. I said to the guy who was running the thing, I was like, I'm worried about her. And he's like, why? I said, because she can't hinge. Like, I'm worried about her sprinting in the 40. Did she do any sprint work, like, prepping for this? He's like, no. But, and we'll see what happens. Maybe she just won't score that well. Popped her hamstring sprinting in the 40. Like, just blew it open.
Great.
I was like, part of me was like, maybe I'll get a deal now. Like, maybe we'll have a business relationship. Mm-hmm. That's not what happened. But that was my intern Olympics experience at Exos. I don't want to make this whole podcast about me, but I'll tell you another story.
Yeah.
There was a gym we were working with back in like 2016, 2017. And we were testing a thesis. And it was that if you are squatting, you should know if your left leg can produce similar force as your right leg without any force plates or anything like that. So I want you to put a barbell on your front rack, do as many step-ups as you can on the left at a height that approximates the same angle as your hip in a squat. Take a rest, full recovery, do it on the right. If you're not within 20% of reps from left to right, you're not going to squat for the next 12 weeks. You're going to do step-ups. If you are within 20%, but you're not within 10, you have a choice. If you're within 10%, you're squatting. At the end of the study, the people who did study, right? That's, I got to put that in air quotes.
Sure.
The people who did single leg step-ups improved their maximum squat by over 9%. The people who did squats improved their squat by less than 3%. We posted that online. Mm-hmm. The amount of people who came at me who were like, that's not a double blind study. That's mm-hmm. bullshit. I was like, well, there's my,
that's data for you.
There's my, yep. my forgiveness, not permission.
Yeah. That's the thick skin I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You got to have it.
Mm-hmm. What, can you remember a time that you had to really pull out some thick skin?
Oh gosh. I try to like black those out.
Why? They're, I think they're character building.
They are, but you got to move on. You can't keep True. Them in your brain, you know? Just mm-hmm. learn from it and keep going. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but something will come to me, I'm sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When you first got into studying data for big companies, did you have any imposter syndrome about you? Something, you didn't come from that world?
Not even a little bit. I have it now.
Interesting. Right. Why? Did you have like the, what do they call it? Dunning-Kruger, where you're like, I know
Probably.
Everything.
Like, I know exactly mm-hmm. what you're talking about. And you know what, again, dates me, but it was pre-social media. I didn't have anyone to compete with, just my peers. And, you know, it was a very not that it's not collaborative today, but you just see so many other things going on and you're like, and it is the Dunning-Kruger. Cause now the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily imposter syndrome. I just feel like there are so many experts out there, but that could be fake too, because social media is fake. Mm-hmm. Some of it. Listen, like yours is a great, like this is why
thanks.
I'm here. Yeah.
I appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Mine is confusing for me because what I want to talk about all the time is what I do talk about. Mm-hmm. But that's the stuff that people don't understand our company does for our clients. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to run my social media to drive more business on a regular basis, I would just talk about like predictive evaluation to avoid injury, mm-hmm. to remediate injury, mm-hmm. exercise program design, mindset of all that.
Yep.
But that's...
People just gloss over and...
Choke. No, people love that.
They do?
Oh, they love that stuff. How do I get over my back pain? Hmm. But I'm like,
Well, you got to start with like a catchy, like yeah. get over your back pain. You don't start with all of that. It's the same on the neuroscience side that right. we haven't talked about yet. Right. But yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy talking about that stuff. I've talked about it so much and I've worked with so many clients and I've said the same things so many times. But yeah. What are you going to do? So no imposter syndrome early on. You were at Exos, then you went to Intel to Exos to Tonal to what's the name of the company you're at?
Now Vital Neuro.
Okay. What were you doing at Tonal?
Tonal was looking at, so Tonal, for people that don't know, it's kind of like Peloton's competitor, but in strength training. So it's mm-hmm. People confuse it with the mirror, but it has cables, system, you can lift up to 200 pounds of weight on it, the screen. And so we had all of this data on how fast you're pulling, how heavy, every single rep, counting all of your reps. It's the first time I ever in my life, so this was 2021, thought about a set and the accumulation of weight that you just lifted. Like, you just lifted 100 pounds, 10 pounds, 10 reps, so 100 pounds. It's like, that's an interesting weight. But because you can't really easily calculate that or keep track of that when you're in the gym without this machine. So it was a revolutionary for me, kind of, to think about it that way. And I'll talk about why in a second. But at Tone, I was looking at the member data and the human performance data and trying to understand, you know, what programs would help different member populations, because Tonal started out for elite athletes and then it trickled down into like beginner to weight training.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, a lot of their programming was for elite, and then there was nothing there for like, how, what is a squat? How do you squat properly?
Were elites using it?
Yeah. The ones that had the money to.
Yeah, well, elites typically have the money for it, no?
Yeah, well, it depends.
Okay.
Depends.
They need the money and the space in their house and permission from their spouse.
Exactly, exactly.
It's a lot of needs.
We had some people that would just program their own workouts and just killed it. I mean, it was amazing to see. And it's pretty addictive because it has, you know, little dopamine hits in there, your strength score and things like that. Yeah. So
there, even if my wife and I said, we want that, I don't know that there's anywhere in our house to put it.
Yeah.
Like, we'd have to take down a piece of art and put the Tonal up and it would be in our living room.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
Yeah. It is pretty, I think, but I'm a data tech person. Right. So I'm like, look at this really pretty machine. The arms tuck away nicely.
Companies like Tonal, to me, I like to study the business model of it. And I could be so far off that I don't even know what I'm talking about, but it looks like there's no real path to profitability selling memberships with Tonal, or selling Tonals even. I could be wrong, but I see huge upside for Tonal selling data. You're nodding. Is that the business plan?
I can't speak for them now, but I mean, it is the largest strength training database in the world, hands down.
Database, right.
Yeah.
Because you don't need, like, if you have 10,000 people using it, that might not be profitable for the company.
Right.
But it would be an exorbitant amount of information. Every time you pull the cable,
you see the speed, how fast. There's eccentric modes. I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah. I would be shocked if that's not like a Trojan horse company where people think their business model is selling fitness, but their business model is selling data.
Interesting.
Yeah. You ever heard of Rent the Runway? That's their business model.
You're kidding.
No. They're the world's largest laundromat. So they have all of the data on what fabrics break down, how many washes, what materials, which zippers are good, which buttons are good. And they sell that.
That's genius.
They didn't start that way.
No, but their clothes are awesome.
I guess. Yeah. I have never rented the runway. So you left Tonal how long ago?
2021.
What was your, was it leaving Tonal or was
actually
it going?
Sorry, 2022.
Okay. And was it leaving that or was it going to where you are now?
What do you mean leaving that?
I have a belief set that is, like, whenever people talk about, like, another business stole my member or they stole my staff or anything like that, I'm like, no, they didn't steal your staff.
Yeah.
Your staff wanted to go there. You had already lost them. If it wasn't them, it would have been somebody else.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm asking you is, was there something exciting about where you were going?
Well, interesting. Tonal got hit with the tech layoffs of 2022, so that meant I did too. So that was not by choice. However, I mean, I think things like that are blessings in disguise, if I can say that, because it was the first time in my career I was able to say on LinkedIn, I'm looking for work, and significant amounts of opportunity came in.
Why do you think that is? I hear from people all the time. I applied for 100 jobs on LinkedIn. Nobody responded.
Because data, if you think, so this is the dumb luck part of this. Data is every company in every city. I mean, data, they need data people. And they need data people that can tell stories. And so this little unicorn was all of a sudden free. And I'd built relationships that were meaningful to people. And that's, I mean, connection and relationship is so important, both personally and in business. And when you don't have that, you know, I don't think if I hadn't built that or had a reputation, I wouldn't have had those opportunities.
So funny. The way you said that, you were talking about everyone needs data. All I was thinking was, No, they don't. And then you said, need a data to tell stories. And I was like, ah, fuck, we might need a data person to tell stories.
Yeah.
Because it could be your, like, it's your marketing. Mm-hmm. Right? Being able to say, I don't even know where to look.
Yeah.
But to be able to say, we have this many people, they've done this. If you look at it from this direction, mm-hmm. it means that. You want that.
Right. Or even just, you know, understanding your clientele mm-hmm. and which ones succeeded and just taking that, and you probably know in your head, but having it on paper and then being able to replicate that over and over and just iterating it all the time can mm-hmm. always grow. So
yeah, that is something that we do, mm-hmm. but we don't have any like data centric people.
Sure.
We have business people who are mm-hmm. looking at data, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was exciting to you about the opportunity that you have now? Because if you had people throwing themselves at you, mm-hmm. you chose a startup mm-hmm. that has significant obstacles to overcome to become a company that is mm-hmm. financially successful, that is a household name, that is accepted in terms mm-hmm. of not being quasi-science from people who don't understand it fully.
Yeah, so my story time. So when I was let go with Tonal, I did about a year of my own contract work, and I was introduced to Vital Neuro through a former colleague of mine at Exos. Mm-hmm. And Exos is a big pivot in or a center of my career. But, you know, in talking about, so Vital Neuro, to explain what it is we created a mental fitness or, you know, it's a brain wearable. It's much like a heart rate monitor, but for your brain that helps with sleep, focus, anxiety, things like that by playing music that adapts to what the brain monitor is telling. Like it doesn't put anything in, it's just reading your brain signal like heart rate monitors do. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing was at Exos, they had four pillars, and I think they've since moved on from these, but it's mindset, nutrition, movement, recovery. And movement, nutrition, and recovery were, you could measure those and on the data side, measure them, they're scalable, but the mindset piece was so ambiguous and mm-hmm. can't scale that. You can't necessarily measure it. And that was always kind of like missing piece. And then to go back even further, my mom dealt with cancer in 2015 and she passed away in 2016, but I was with her. She had a stem cell transplant and, you know, in the hospital for most of the 2015. And I didn't, at that time, I hadn't started Exos yet either. So my human performance exposure was just through, you know, high school sports and some at Intel. So Intel and Exos are joined because I trained with Exos at Intel. They ran their gyms there. And so I had pretty limited human performance experience. So when she was going through that cancer, it was like she was physically suffering, but she was also mentally suffering. And I felt so helpless. There was nothing I could do to help her, you know, meditate. I didn't know how to meditate. I didn't even think about meditating. And there's just all these things easy to access that are free that I didn't know about. And if we would have had, and this isn't like trying to sell anything, it's just having a device that would have helped our stress levels and just enjoyed our time together even more, as much as you could. You know, someone's in a leukemia ward that can't have a bunch of visitors because their immune systems are down, that would have just been a game changer for me. You know what I mean? So when I came across Vital Neuro and like, well, we help people with their stress and anxieties, like, oh my God, I need to know more about this. And I've never heard of a brain wearable before. So I actually worked for free for a few months for them because I just believe, so I just want to help people and support people. And this is a way to do that. So, yeah.
I appreciate you sharing that story. I'm curious how I'm hearing it's like a heart rate monitor for your brain. Mm-hmm. How does having a heart rate monitor for your brain reduce your stress?
Okay, that's a great question.
Uh-huh. Three.
He's like, how many? It's a drinking game now.
No, we're good. I'd be hammered if it was a drinking game. And there were three.
That's
yeah.
Good. That's good.
We'd be in trouble.
Yeah. So basically this device is headphones that has a monitor on there. And so we play music that we know is calming. And as your brain changes, so just like if your heart rate changes, your brain changes constantly, you have a thought, you're distracted. We play this reward tone. So at the beginning of every session, they're about 10 minutes each, we take your baseline and we understand, okay, where is Sean at this very moment? And what sound, what frequency is going to help him to relax, for example. Okay. So we understand that. And then in the rest of your session, when we see that you're distracted, we're going to pull that sound away and it signals to your brain, hey, you're not relaxed anymore, which sounds counterintuitive. And at first it's kind of distracting, but it's definitely, if you think about it, like a workout for your brain. Over time it gets easier. But when you are back in that relaxed state, we give you that reward tone back and your brain is like, oh, I like this.
Okay.
I want to stay in this as long as possible. So over time you stay in those relaxed spaces longer and longer. And it's, I'm sure your audience is familiar with hypertrophy. Mm-hmm. It's kind of taking that, but for your brain, neuroplasticity, and your brain is plastic. And so kind of rewiring your brain to be more resilient, more relaxed. So when you have something that's stressful, you can take a breath, pause, and respond to it versus just react like that.
What's fascinating about that for me is I just did VO2 max, RMR, and force play testing. And the first thing I was thinking of is like, I want to win this test,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sleep deprived because I have a newborn baby at home. Mm-hmm. I'm 40 years old now. I'm not 25 years old anymore. And I know I'm going to perform the best I possibly can now. And I'm already in my brain like, I want another shot at that
mm-hmm.
in a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm exercising, I'm doing all the things, but I want yeah. another shot in a year. I feel like, this is going to sound totally egotistical. It's not. I feel like I would test elite if there was like a measure of the norm mm-hmm. in my ability to go to a mentally relaxed state, mm-hmm. to deal with stress for a moment and then push it aside, not mm-hmm. bury it, just
sure.
move aside. I'd be fascinated to learn that.
That'd be amazing. And so just like working out, so historically our app would give you a score mm-hmm. after every session, but I started thinking about it and our team, right? If after every workout you got a score, that would be so demotivating because not every day you're feeling 100%. Like with my Whoop, I'm like, I wake up and it's like, oh, I'm red today.
Probably not Whoop out for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now I think you can hide your metrics, but, I'm green today, by the way. So yeah, we decided to not score you after every session. It's like, okay, here's a 6-week program, do this. And at the beginning of the 6 weeks, take your benchmark and we'll give you a score then and try to do the best you can, be in an undistracted space, like kids go outside, mm-hmm. you know? And then just brain train for 6 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever you decide.
How long is the training?
So each session,
10 minutes is a session.
About 10 minutes. And then we've seen statistically significant, to talk science for a second, improvements in as little as 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. And so some people report after one session.
Is it one session per day?
You can. So the way I use it right before bed.
Mm-hmm.
Not every day, because do you work out every day? Probably not.
No.
You know, life happens.
I like that you hesitated. That you thought maybe I did.
You might.
For a moment.
Literally, I was like, he probably does. He's going to prove me wrong.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
5 days.
So it's like 3 to 5 times a week. Just like, it's literally just like working out.
Okay.
And yeah, but faster results.
You have me interested now.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting tool product.
What do you think what is the compelling case for people to do this?
So we did internal case studies. So these are, come at me, like, not you, but, you know, we're doing our third party validation, you know, coming up with the university. But just internally, we wanted to say, is this a viable, like, are we actually seeing in the real world when people have lives, are they using it and are they seeing benefits? So we did 4 highly stressed groups. So flight attendants, nurses, teachers, and first responders, about 120 people. And we had them do 3 sessions a week, about 10 minutes. And that's when we saw the statistically significant improvements. We measured 8 areas of mental health. And one of them was sleep quality. And for flight attendants, their reported sleep quality improvement was 40%.
That's anecdotal? Meaning yeah. that's, okay.
Self-reported, right? And internal. We didn't control for anything else. We just said, use this. We didn't tell them. We gave them recommendations, like use a relaxed program mm-hmm. after, or a sleep program, you know, when you're done with your shift. But if you think about it, flight attendants, I mean, first responders too, but flight attendants are crossing time zones. They're going sure. to bed at crazy times. And for us to help them just down-regulate and have a we can't give people more hours of sleep, but we can give them better quality sleep. Mm-hmm. So just sleep is so important, and it's the foundation, good quality sleep, of just how you respond to things and how you respond to passengers. And, mm-hmm. you know, people are wild on planes now, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a Louis C.K. skit where he talks about people complaining about not having the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
He's like, you're at 30,000 feet traveling 600 miles an hour. I'm sorry, the Wi-Fi is not working. Right, it's a miracle.
Exactly. It's a miracle you're here.
Was there a placebo group?
No, but that is a great point. That's going to be in our third party validation. And there's also going to be a pre period. So mm-hmm. like 6 weeks, no vital neuro,
right.
6 weeks of vital, and then 6 weeks after to see how long the effects
last. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's with a placebo. Like, we also want to do placebo. So people that have never meditated before, and then also a group of meditators, because there is a difference in that as
I'm
well.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm. The reason I asked that mm-hmm. is, I imagine it's in the way that you would nuance what the control and the placebo actually look like would be fascinating. Because if you choose the wrong music, for example, mm-hmm. everyone in that group could go to a different sure. mental state. Mm-hmm. So that's just a fascinating thought mm-hmm. for me as to how you do that. The other thing for people who've never been around research at all, despite the fact that I don't enjoy it, I've read a lot of it. There's no need to get that in the weeds on studies until you've demonstrated potential efficacy
right.
on an inexpensive, mm-hmm. larger scale, that then you come to, okay, well, mm-hmm. how can we try and prove ourselves wrong?
Right, exactly.
You don't need to do that until you've proven yourself potentially correct.
Exactly. Yeah, because we don't want to put a product out there without even just trying it internally.
Right.
You know, so.
So, do you believe, like, are you guys suggesting that there's a possibility that consistent use of a vital neuro could lead to somebody getting the results that they would get, for example, in talk therapy without having to go to the talk therapy?
No, not at all. So it would be a supplement to talk therapy. I actually, I feel like everyone's in therapy these days, and it's like a revolution, which is great because I think everyone should try it out. But I was talking to my therapist, shout out to Dr. Louise, and telling her, you know, obviously what my job is and what it's neurofeedback. And she's like, this is amazing. She's like, I've always wanted to employ this into my clinic. And actually one of our founders has a clinic here in New York. And he does, what's that?
In the city?
In the city.
Okay.
Yep.
For people who don't know, if you live on Long Island, when you say the city, it's Manhattan.
Okay.
That's
the Upper West Side, I believe.
Okay.
Near Columbia. And so he was doing neurofeedback. He still does in the clinic. So it's like a 19-channel cap with gel he put on. Takes about 10 minutes to put on. Ladies, it'll mess your hair up so fast. Guys, too. Mm-hmm. But and you sit there, you get a brain map, and then you do the same thing that our headphones do. But it's really expensive. You have to make an appointment to see a neuroscientist. And it wasn't very... We just wanted to democratize the access mm-hmm. to that. So, I forgot where we're going with this. But
is there a lapse in the, we were talking about the talk therapy, your therapist likes to use it.
Yeah. So she knows about neurofeedback in the clinic, and she was just so excited to be able to have access to something like that she can help. I wouldn't say prescribe, because it's not a medical device. It's not to cure anything. It's to help feelings of anxiety and help you just sleep quality, right? Mm-hmm. So, but to have something that is neurofeedback with clinical grade EEG in the real world that is somewhat affordable, it's not thousands and thousands of mm-hmm. dollars like going to a clinic, she was over the moon about it.
Sure.
And it's kind of like the next, using technology to help us.
Is it a noticeable, you said that the flight attendants reported a 40% improvement mm-hmm. in their sleep quality. the way I forget who I was talking to about a supplement, but what I was describing it to was the idea of like you're bench pressing and somebody just taps the bar and you're like, okay, good. I can finish mm-hmm. through it. Would you say that that's a similar description of this where it's like you feel a slight accelerant of your progress, but it's not as if this does it for you?
I mean, I'll just give you the experience I've had. So sure. I've worn a Whoop since 2020 and my HRV's kind of been pretty low for as active as I am. And so I was doing everything to increase it. Cause I personally think HRV is like the fountain of youth, right?
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is controversial, but
I don't think it's not. I don't understand it enough to have okay. an opinion.
Yeah. But anyway, so I was doing so many things to improve it and moving the needle slightly, you know? And then at the end of last summer, started doing this neurofeedback with Vital and adding in some meditation, you know, all the morning sunlight, all the things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not attributing it only to Vital, but if you think about starting a meditation practice and you're already stressed out and you have a million racing thoughts, getting really good at meditation is hard.
Yeah.
So we have a meditation mode in Vital. So you just put them on music and reward tone in and out. And so I was meditating with Vital and within a month, my HRV doubled, which is wild, mm-hmm. which is wild because I've tried everything else, but it allowed me to turn off my sympathetic nervous system because I think it was just always in fight or flight, always. Mm-hmm. And I was just able to turn it off and like actually chill.
Well, what's fascinating about that to me, there's a lot of things that are fascinating about that to me. One of them is that it unlocked the potential for you to go somewhere with your nervous system mm-hmm. that unlocked the ability for you to see drastic physical and mental mm-hmm. improvement. Mm-hmm. So you could say it gave you the improvement mm-hmm. through a proxy, or you can make the claim that it only gave you this and you had to do this stuff. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I don't care. It gave right. you the opportunity that you didn't have before. Mm-hmm. And it's also fascinating because I feel like when it comes to people thinking about their health in general, everyone wants to think about like, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? What do I need to do? And the thing that I say all the time is if you were the person you needed to be, you would know what you needed to do. So stop focusing on what you need to do and start focusing on who you need to be. And that's a mental shift. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the people you know who were like a mess, they're not one tactic away from being somebody who you admire. They're a whole different person away. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing you say is that this kind of stimulation can enhance the ability of somebody to allow themselves to do that.
Yes, 1,000%. And like I said, I just started. I started therapy last summer and just going on this whole mental performance journey. Mm-hmm. And I truly feel like a different person than I was a year ago.
Did you choose to do that because you were just curious? And you don't have to dig into like that. No, I went to therapy because I have this whatever issue, this whatever. You can be as open or sure. as closed as you would like. Yeah. I want to just give you that freedom. But I'm fascinated by people who go down like the mental mm-hmm. development journey more than the sit in therapy and talk about myself all the time. And mm-hmm. it feels good that I leave and change nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think just the type of person I am. If I'm given a plan for improvement, I just stick to it. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate in that way. But I just was noticing personal trends that I was like, I think I should go talk to someone, you know, and so many of my friends I'm actually going to a friend's therapist. So she just had nothing but great things to say about her. And I was like, let's just try it. Why not? And then adding in the mental performance piece with the meditation and neurofeedback. And, you know, it's just been literally revolutionary. It's been awesome.
What's the biggest change you've noticed?
Like I said, I'm able to pause. Because I think before, you know, COVID accelerated a lot of our stresses and anxieties and, you know.
What? It did?
I think so. It did. Little bit. There's some data maybe to back that up. Yeah, but just feeling like not being able to pause or even feel like I wanted to pause, just have to put out fires. Because when I was working during COVID, everyone all of a sudden needed a ton of data from every single angle because they needed to keep their facilities open. So it was ever since then, I felt like I just didn't stop. I just kept filling my time with distraction, and there's always noise and social media and music and TV and all the things. And it's like, let's just pause and see what this space can create. Mm-hmm. So it was revolutionary. But in the same vein, we're talking about Vital and how, you know, anecdotally it helped me create space. I also have ADHD. I'm just a mess over here. But, you know, I was prescribed Adderall in college, and it definitely helped, but I just don't prefer taking medication. So I took it for a semester, stopped. But with Vital, that we have a mode that is for concentration. Mm-hmm. And I feel like every time I use it 10 minutes, I feel like I've taken an Adderall. And this is anecdotal, and, you know, there's no science behind it. It's just how I feel. And it's not, it's just neurofeedback. I mean, it's how it works. So I think others that have done neurofeedback can.
I've taken an Adderall.
Yeah. So
I researched and wrote my thesis in 3 days.
Oh, yeah, that is impressive.
Thank you. 54 pages.
Oh my God.
On Adderall.
Yeah.
I remember being like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I can read every book in this library right now. Mm-hmm. Give it to me. That would be.
It's like Limitless, the movie.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, not an advocate for people taking Adderall recreationally or to study.
Yeah.
Not that I have to say that, but I want to say it.
Yeah.
Especially these days. Like when I was in college, a pill was a pill. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like maybe that's Mexican fentanyl.
Oh yeah,
that wasn't a thing. I didn't have to have a test and a Narcan just in case. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to relevant topics.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm starting to actually feel some decision fatigue over, and I would love for you to help me with it, is it's got all these different modes. I hate decisions. Mm-hmm. Like I love decisions at work.
Yes.
I make a lot of them every day. Mm-hmm. Micro, macro, I'm decisive. Mm-hmm. When I get home, if my wife says, what do you want to do for dinner? I'm like, we need a separation. You know, like I want to be done with decisions. Mm-hmm. How do I know which mode to use?
Yeah, that's perfect. Great question.
Thanks.
So we just actually today launched a new home screen that gives you recommendations for the first, you know, 8 weeks. And then because we just went direct to consumer in February, so we're brand new. So the next iteration is programs. So say you want to get better sleep quality or better sleep. We will have a program that tells you when you open your app, here's what you do, here's how long, and here's when you do it. See you tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And is there a way for you to put the headset on, for example, and then have it say, based on your readings, this is the program design we would recommend for you?
Not yet, but that is future state. You want to join our development team?
Perfect. I'll join your advisory team.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
I'll be your idea and your challenge guy.
Perfect. We need that.
Perfect. Uh-huh. I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. You let the CEO know. You got a guy in New York.
Got him on speed dial. Yep.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. What has been the biggest difference for you? That I want people to be able to hear you describe. Let me back up. Mm-hmm. When I talk about personal development, it's easy for people to discount it as like this woo-woo thing and this like esoteric, but how do I know and how do I do it thing. And one of the things I find is most useful for people, especially like if I'm speaking on a stage, is describing, this is where I was. This is what I was trying to accomplish. This is how it felt. This is who was around me. Then I decided to be this person. And this is how it felt for a while. And this is what happened. And I stayed as this person long enough, and then I got these things. And that's not just tangible things, it's time, it's relationships, it's calm, peace. Mm-hmm. What have you been able to do as a result of going through this last year's personal transformation?
Wow, what a question. You know, I feel like I've been able to just be a better friend and a better family member because I can hear people now and I'm just so self-aware. You know, therapy has a good way of poking holes at you in a good way, or not holes, but like poking at you and like, oh, did you know that you had this thing over here that mm-hmm. triggered you? And you're like, oh my gosh, I just thought I was X, Y, and Z, but there's actual core wound if we, you know, want to talk therapy. And just being able to be reflective and self-aware and understand myself better, that can then help others. You know, gotta take care of yourself before you take care of other people. So it's, I don't know, just overall better person because you just feel better.
Can I stay on this thread with you?
Yeah, of course.
What does it mean to be a better friend?
Like I said, just, you know, if your friend, again, we're all stressed, and just mm-hmm. being able to hear what your friends are going through and just listen and kind of not be a therapist, but also kind of be a therapist mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of thinking in ways that maybe perspectives they didn't see, but in a very gentle way, and gentle reminders of like who they are and that they can get through things. And it's almost like being a coach, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you find your friend group change?
No, because I have a really great group of friends mm-hmm. that we've just grown like decades long, and we've just gone through a lot of growing pains. Like, I'll give you an example. One of my best friends actually lost her arm the same year my mom passed away. So
how'd that happen?
She was in an ATV accident.
Wow.
And she is the most inspirational person I know. And, you know, I think it was less than a month later, she was back in the gym, just getting after it. I mean, lost her dominant arm. So, mm-hmm. you know, we've gone through a lot of hard things together. So that kind of keeps you
sure
together.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So is it gratifying to be a better friend? Because one of the things that I feel very much the same. Mm-hmm. One of the things I actually had to go to my mentor, right? Because I was like, this is actually before I went to Forever Strong. Mm. I just said to him, I'm like, the only reason I'm going, because I don't really like events, is because Gabrielle's a friend and I want to support her. And when you're throwing an event, you don't know if people are going to show up. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be there to make sure someone's there. And then I said, so how do I get the most out of it? Like, what do I do? I don't. Mm-hmm. He said, just be the most valuable person in the room. I said, what does that even mean? Like, how do I be the most valuable person in the room? And his thing was, if you can ask people who are there good questions about themselves that other people don't ask them, mm-hmm. that they've always wanted to be asked but never even knew, and enjoy answering, you've made the event more valuable by being the person in the room who gives everybody a better experience. And
1,000%.
But at first I was like, really? Like, that's, it's like, yeah. So I went with that mindset. I thought it was going to feel like work to do that. And it was so the opposite. It was so enjoyable. And so when I ask you if it's gratifying to be a better friend, I think that people listening, it can be hard to understand that you're not the best friend you possibly could be today, and that it's more fun to be a better friend. Mm-hmm. That's why I was asking you that question.
For sure. Hands down.
Yeah. We can. I have a lot more I want to ask you about that, but I don't want you to talk about your friends. Personal stuff on the podcast. When is therapy over?
Honestly, I don't think it's ever over. I think the frequency changes. Mm-hmm. Let's normalize talking about therapy. I go every week and mm-hmm. I am so excited to go. It's like talking, because I have a great therapist and she's just so easy to talk to. It's like having an hour-long conversation with a friend. And, you know, I saw a meme the other day. It was like, from a therapist's perspective, it said, is today going to be a gossip day or is today going to be a trauma day? Mm-hmm. not gossip, but you know what I mean? Yes. Like, just talking about like, oh, this scenario happened, and versus like, here's a core wound from my childhood, you know, really deep stuff where there's tears. And, you know, so I go every week, but I think at some point it'll be twice a month, and then once a month, and then maybe once a quarter, but mm-hmm. I don't know when that is, and I don't think anyone does, but it's I just think it's so valuable to have this one person that has your back in mind and also can have hard conversations with you, like, you know, you didn't think about this all the way through, you know.
It sounds like you have a productive person. And mm-hmm. when I say productive, what I mean is a person who is going to disallow you from just wallowing in something.
Oh, yeah.
As compared to a therapist who's like, how'd that make you feel?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, she does say that.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Of course. It's just, it's my daughter was, we put her in, we called it her feelings coach. Mm-hmm. Right? Because she was having a really hard time regulating her emotions. And she was 6 at the time, maybe mm-hmm. 7. And I'm a guy who's like, I'm all for bringing other people in. I'm not all for handing my kid over to somebody else and saying, do your thing. Mm-hmm. I was really relieved that this person gave my daughter specific coping mechanisms. Like, when this happens, how does it make you feel to do this? Mm-hmm. Okay, then this is a good way for you to handle doing that.
Right.
And I wish all therapists did that
mm-hmm. for like their patients. Like a checklist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's like, I don't know, I feel my mission in life because of so many stories I have and how I grew up. I mean, no pity. I mean, we all have our stories. Is really just helping people find the tools that are easy and accessible to implement that just help them live better lives. Like, you know, playing sports in high school, go hard every single day versus like, hey, did you know you could train with your menstrual cycle? Mm-hmm. And you're gonna less prone to injury, better gains, mentally feel better.
Well, hold on, take a step back. Because uh-huh. you said, you know, you can train with your menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
And I think that that could have been misunderstood as you can train even when you have it. What you meant was you
can. Cycle-based training.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So where in your cycle you are lifting heavier with lower reps versus lifting. So this is what we were talking about earlier, thinking about cumulative weight on tonal. So if you lift, let's see if I'm going to get the math right. This is a true test. So mm-hmm. 10 pounds, 10 reps, that's 100 pounds. But say you are in the part of your cycle where you should be lifting heavier. So doing 5 reps of 20 pounds versus as 10 pounds. So you're still lifting 100 pounds over those reps. It's just how intensely are you doing it?
Can we stay on this for a second? Because now mm-hmm. the women who are listening are like, wait a minute.
They're like, wait.
So mm-hmm. when should they lift heavy? When should they lift light? Like, what? How?
I'm not an expert on this, but I...
Well, so then give them bad advice.
I'm not going to give bad advice. I'm going to give my own experience in the... So I did a women's study at EXO. So I was a participant in that at the end of... What year are we in? 20. So
we're in 4 now.
So it's the end of 22, and it was revolutionary. It changed the way I train because so in the beginning, the day you have your period, that's the day one of your cycle. It's the follicular phase. In the first 2 weeks, I don't want to say you. This is where you would lift heavier. So it's more of an intensive style training.
While you're on your period.
So there's some, first of all, listen to your body. Like
right.
if you're a lot of women, the day of their period, day 2, day 3, heavy flow, like if you don't want to lift, don't lift. Like that's the number one. That's your body should be your guide. Mm-hmm. But then as you feel better or, you know, ready to get into the gym, lifting heavier. And then as you're, you know, that's when that's when your hormones are most like men's. Like a man's or profile, like they're very low. Everything
testosterone's higher compared to estrogen compared to other times in the month.
Sure. And then when you ovulate, so that's about day 14, that's kind of when this transition happens to starting to draw out. So have more reps, but at lighter weights. Mm-hmm. But again, it's all about, you know, what your body's saying. And it depends on your cycle. It depends on the type of cycle. Like if you're on birth control, your hormones are pretty flat, I believe. You know, in the study, it was all women who had natural cycles.
Okay.
And we were all below 40, which I'm pushing that limit, but, but truly anecdotally again, I didn't see the results, but just from what I knew I was lifting at the beginning of the 8-week study to the end, probably increased my strength 15 to 20%, not even kidding. And I felt amazing.
Wow.
And that was around the holidays. It was at the end of the year, Thanksgiving had happened. So it really was transformative.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. That must have ramifications for women's sports. Like if I'm an Olympic sprinter, mm-hmm. I'm trying to manipulate my cycle to be where I'm in my follicular stage on race day. Mm-hmm. That's wild.
It's wild.
That's a wild thought.
It's a lot of, and I mean, we could go down a rabbit hole with this. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm not an expert. It's just from my experience and, you know, reading Stacey Sims and just my own training and just knowing, like I said, the day, not that you know, but you have a lot of daughters. Well, they're not.
I have a decent idea. So, but I'll give you some potentially TMI. I hired a sex and relationship coach with my wife back in 2020 or 2021.
That's amazing.
And she taught us, Alexa mm-hmm. Martinez, mm-hmm. taught us that there are different kinds of things that she's going to want during different phases of her cycle, all the way from the kinds of foods I'm cooking. I do the cooking in the house. The kinds of foods I'm cooking, mm-hmm. the way she's going to want me to approach her, the kind of sex she's going to want to have, like all of that. And so I, by no means, am an expert on the female menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
But I do understand that there's nuance to, mm-hmm. to the way that the brain-body relationship is functioning mm-hmm. when a woman's in it.
Right. Well, even just how you're feeling. Like, I know, and you know, when I played competitive sports in high school, and the day you start your period, and coach is like, we're doing sprints and lifting and doing all this stuff, and you're like, I'm just mentally, it takes a toll. It's not mm-hmm. even about your body. It's just mentally. And so if we would have had this mindset back then to understand, like, what would we have done? And also the nutrition component and the mindset piece and all these things that are really free. It's like basic human rights mm-hmm. that we just didn't have Google.
The thing I would like to believe that Active Life does for people is makes it so that everything you're describing right now, mm-hmm. you don't even notice it. Because what you're describing is all true. And I'm just thinking about having to keep track of all of this stuff to decide if I should eat an apple or broccoli today. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then it's like, well, do I want to go heavy? Do I want to go light? Do I want to sleep extra? Do I want to sleep less? Mm-hmm. Like all of the variables, that can get overwhelming if you're not a data person.
Yes, I hear you.
The reason I threw my Whoop out. Mm-hmm. is, and maybe because I didn't pay for it, but also because it was like, oh, I'm not supposed to work out hard today, mm-hmm. but I feel great.
Yeah. I mean, that's your internal compass. That's what you got to listen to.
Right. But if I'm listening to my internal compass, I don't need a thing that's telling me what I'm supposed to be feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I agree. And I think too, if it's telling you for Whoop, for example, it's red, green, yellow every day. And if you're just constantly in the red, then that, and you may not feel that way, but that could be a marker to be like, well, let me just take a rest.
Sure.
Here, you know?
Sure.
So it's just a balance.
Did someone teach you that? And?
What's that?
You were very emphatic and intentional about saying and instead of but.
My therapist.
Okay.
Uh-huh. That's one thing I've learned. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's that one word has been, I'll say it again, transformative.
And instead of and. But.
Mm-hmm. 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 Because you don't want to discount what someone just said, even though you're agreeing with them. Mm-hmm. You want to add to it.
Yeah. It's one of the things we teach our clients. Mm-hmm. It's if your girlfriend, boyfriend mm-hmm. says, do I look good in this? Mm-hmm. And you say, yeah, but you look better in something else. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're saying I don't look good in mm-hmm. this. If you say, yeah, and you look even better in something else, mm-hmm. or without, take the even out.
Right.
Yeah, and you look better in something else. It's like, okay, I look good in this, and I look better in that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's wild.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Language matters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other huge, simple breakthroughs that you've had like that someone can
in
walk
therapy?
Away? Sure, in anything.
That's great. I really think it's just about truly listening. Mm-hmm. And I mean, really my therapy is so not like I don't want to share it. I mean, I'll just say it. Sure. Like I love my parents, but we grew up in a very chaotic place, and not knowing that, I mean, they were chaotic. They fought a lot, really. And not realizing that, you know, just in learning that energy is so important and it matters. And even though you can't see it, everyone can feel it. Mm-hmm. And even though kids are little and you think they can't remember things, I'm rereading The Body Keeps the Score. you know, even if you're yelling around little kids, like, well, they're not going to remember this, but they're feeling your energy and internalizing it in their prefrontal cortex, to get a little neuroscience nerd, hasn't fully developed. So they're just trying to understand, well, I want love and you're yelling, but you're holding me. So, like, mm-hmm. I'm getting mixed signals. So really my therapy has been to understand, like, hey, all of these triggers that you have, it stems from something. You're not a bad person. You're not this and that, but you're probably always going to be triggered by these things. Here are the tools to help you with this. Mm-hmm. So it's like, because I have ADHD, I need lots of lists. So if I have like a frustration checklist, like, okay, here's what I need to do when I'm frustrated. And that sounds silly, but over time it becomes muscle memory that you don't have to look at your phone on this list, but it's been super helpful.
Yeah. When I started learning about that stuff, and I don't mean to suggest that I've learned anywhere near as much as you have about it or experienced as much, but when I became a parent, parent, it became really important to me, especially I think as I was having daughters, that I was like, I want to make sure that my daughters grow up self-aware, mm-hmm. confident, mm-hmm. and capable with high self-esteem. And I know I have a role in that. And there was a day, maybe like 6 months ago, that it was fairly innocuous. I thought there was nothing to it. And I was mm-hmm. just telling one of my daughters, like, you need to go upstairs and do this. Like, you need to go upstairs and get changed into your pajamas. I need you to do that now, please. Mm-hmm. And she went and did it. And then I said it just like that. And then she came back down with a drawing. And she handed me the drawing. Or she handed it to my wife.
Oh, no.
And the drawing, I was a monster.
Oh, no.
Screaming at this little thing mm-hmm. that was terrified of the mm-hmm. monster. And I'm like, holy shit. I'm so happy that she did that. Mm-hmm. Because I never would have known. I thought I was totally calm and composed. Mm-hmm. And how the hell am I supposed, like, I had to do the mental work of how am I going to communicate with this daughter now? Because that's right. how she interprets it.
Yep.
If I'm standing. Mm-hmm. Like, I started asking her questions. Mm-hmm. You know, does it make you uncomfortable when I stand mm-hmm. and tell you what you need to do? Because there are times I ask. It's not always telling, but... Are you more comfortable if I get down on one knee for you? Yes. Okay. So now I start getting on one knee. Like, it was just, I was so grateful that she made the drawing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how many other things am I not aware that I'm doing?
Right.
It's wild.
It's good. You raise a daughter to give feedback.
I got three.
Yeah.
And they're different.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, my third, the first two for bedtime, calm them down. Mm-hmm. The third, fist fight. She calms down with, like, I beat the shit out of that kid.
Cool.
No bruises.
Yes. Yeah.
No, right. True, yeah. But like, we wrestle.
Yeah.
I'll slap her where you can hear the slap. Mm-hmm. And she punches me back. Mm-hmm. And like, when we're done, she's like, okay, I'm ready for bed now. It's wild.
Just need to get that energy out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there any part of your story that you'd like to tell that I didn't ask?
No, I really, like I said, I really just, because of, you know, how we all grow up, but just my unique story, just making sure people have access to things that significantly improve their life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, any way I can be of service to people or can just evangelize, I love that word, evangelize tools or practices that help, that's what I'm all in for.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Jen Dischler, thanks for coming to the Activate Podcast.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Term pro. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Active Live Podcast. Please remember, give us a hand, rate it, review it wherever you listen to shows. We are on a mission to humanize the healthcare industry by professionalizing the fitness industry to empower the individual to live a life unlimited by the way that their body looks, feels, or performs. If you are inspired by that mission and want to jump on the wagon, find us anywhere. Active Life Professional on Instagram, Active Life RX on Instagram. Come to me personally at Dr. Sean Pastuch. We want to welcome you onto the train. We want you to be a part of the mission. We want to offer you the opportunity to pursue this right alongside us. We're inspired by your effort, and we hope to help you in your journey. Turn Pro.